So, as I said yesterday, that, or the day before, that this is almost like a different book. And even some of the terms have different connotations due to the fact that we're now discussing Bhakti Yoga, which is the purpose and the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And the last verse of chapter 6 is a sutra which the whole middle 6 chapters spring from. Because there we have some important, 3 very important elements, which was on the examination. And the person's always thinking of Krishna in his heart, so he's like a yogi, he's meditating. But not only that, but he has faith in Krishna. And he has love for Krishna. Majjate or mom. So he has priti that in his heart. That's the difference between the Ashtanga yogi and the Bhakti yogi. The only way that the Ashtanga yogi can actually get darshan of the Paramatma and understand him is through some mix of bhakti. There has to be some bhakti mixed in with his Ashtanga yoga in order for him to actually see the super soul. Some small tinge of bhakti has to be added, because otherwise the other yogas, they don't give the results. For the jnani or brahmavari to enter into Brahmajyoti, there has to be some tinge of bhakti also in his practice. And for the karma yogi, for him to get, you know, the results of his yoga, there also must be some bhakti there. So bhakti is in the middle because it gives life to both karma yoga and jnana yoga. So chapter 7 describes the vibhutis of Sri Krishna, who is the supreme object of worship for the devotees. Krishna is the supreme object of worship for the devotees, and he describes his vibhutis in chapter 7. And he also describes 4 types of people who worship him and 4 types of people who don't worship him. The first 6 chapters describe the processes of jnana and yoga, which require nishkam karma to purify the heart of the practitioner before he begins the jnana or ashtanga yoga. Both of both jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga result in moksha or liberation. But they initially depend on nishkam karma yoga for purification. So, but now the next set of 6 chapters, there's a description of various types of bhakti, beginning with Mishra Bhakti, mixed devotion. Can be mixed with karma, jnana, or even yoga. Most prominently, there's a description of the process of bhakti yoga, which is independent of karma and jnana, or anything else, and which grants liberation, in which one, a special kind of liberation, in which one becomes a loving associate of Krishna. Generally, when Krishna uses the term liberation, mukti, he adds the word vi, you'll notice. Vi mukti means a special, like vishesh mukti, that's the meaning. Vishesh means qualified or special, a special kind of mukti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the only way to taste candy, sugar candy, is with the tongue. You can't taste it with the eyes or with the ears. So similarly, bhakti is the only way to fully realize Parabrahman. Because Parabrahman is gunatit, above the modes. So it's only it's only possible to attain Parabrahman with the help of bhakti, because bhakti is also gunati. Atma-gyan, or the knowledge of self-realization, the knowledge of the soul, is actually sattva-gun-gyan, or knowledge in the mode of goodness. So it cannot enable one to attain Parabrahman. Just like Socrates, Sokrat, also understood that he was not the body, and therefore he wasn't afraid at the time of death. He said, if they can find me, then they can kill me. In other words, he realized that the soul cannot, it's immune, you know, it's imperceptible. But he didn't realize Parabrahman and never spoke about the Supreme in his writings. He didn't have a Vaishnava guru and he didn't practice bhakti. But he understood this Atma-gyan. So Atma-gyan can be understood, but it's not enough. This is knowledge in the mode of goodness. It's not enough to attain Parabrahman. Paladeva Dibhushan, in his commentary to the first verse, he describes that the first six chapters describe the sarup of the jiva. And the first six chapters also describe jnana and yoga, which need nishkam karma to purify the heart. He says that the second chapter describes bhakti, the second six chapters describes bhakti prominently, I mean without karma and jnana. That's the purpose. But in the beginning, there's Mishra Bhakti is described in chapter 7. And mainly, these middle six chapters establish Krishna as the object of worship and how to attain Him. And that is through Ananya Bhakti, or pure devotion. And there's many words in Sanskrit for Ananya Bhakti. So Shuddha Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, Eka Bhakti, Ananya Bhakti, Ekantik Bhakti. Para Bhakti. There's many words. So usually when we come across these words, generally we understand that this referring to pure devotion. And he says that the third six chapters give knowledge how to rise above the modes of nature. So Baladeva Dibhushan, he shows the basic, what's happening in each set of six chapters. The first six chapters, the middle six chapters, and the last six chapters. Like this. Because now we're moving into the middle six chapters, so he summarizes the whole book. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur prays to, when will I receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya so that I can actually practice pure devotion service. Okay, so let us chant the verse and begin discussing a little bit about this verse.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Sakta Manaparta Yogam Yujat Madashayah Asamshayam Samagrama Yatha Yasyati Tatshinu.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." So Krishna begins speaking without being asked by Arjuna, because the topic is so important. And in the last verse he said, Shravan Bhajate Yo Ma Madgeten Antaratmana. So he's talking about his devotee who's better than all of the other yogis. So now he's going to describe how to become Madgatena. And he explains this without being asked. Shravan means faith. So we know that the beginning of bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami, means adau shraddha tata saru sangata bhajanakri. The process of bhakti begins with shraddha. Yadirchaya mat katado jatas sharas tuya puman. In Uddhava Gita, Krishna tells Uddhava also the same thing. Jata sharas tuya puman. And somehow, by the will of good, by good fortune, mat yadirchaya mat katado, one develops some faith. Jata shraddhas. Jata means it's awakening, like janma. Jata shraddhas to yapuman, in a person. So shraddha means not only conviction or faith, but it also means some attraction or some taste. When a person becomes attracted to hear about Krishna, attracted to the kirtan, attracted to being with devotees, attracted to reading the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam. That means that shraddha is there. Some little bit. Prabhupada says, let me see what those Hare Krishnas are doing. Some attraction there. So, shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. How does one actually get faith? Well, initially by getting some bhakti unmukhi sukriti, some divine or devotional piety builds up in the heart, and we'll discuss that at the end of this chapter. In this chapter is given the eligibility of the candidate for bhakti. Because Krishna is beginning his treatise or his lecture on bhakti, so naturally he will begin at the beginning. And so the beginning of bhakti is bhakti mukhi sukriti and shraddha. And when one gets some shraddha, then he performs misha bhakti, because he's not completely pure. He's just starting. He's a Kanishtha Adhikari. So there's some desires there. So therefore chapter 7 talks about Mishra Bhakti. Four kinds of persons. Artha, Jigyasu, Artha, Gyanicha. Mishra Bhaktas over there. And also later on, Jaramarana Mokshaya, Mamashitya, Yatantiye. He describes Yoga Mishra Bhakti, Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti, and Yoga Mishra Bhakti are discussed in chapter 7. Because that's the beginning of bhakti. You don't become a pure devotee right when you join. Although some of us think we are when we first join. But then we soon realize that we're not so pure. But even that realization takes a few months or maybe a few years. Yeah, depending on that. Because in the beginning there's utsaha mayi, kind of false enthusiasm based upon illusion that I am a great devotee. Yeah? Actually, we all go through that stage. I did, I remember too. I thought like I was practically an avatar of Vishnu, you know, God's gift to ISKCON. And I think we all have kind of dreams of ourselves that, you know, we will be the great proponents of bhakti and spread the movement all far and wide, you know, like this. Isn't it? And you're laughing because it's true. We have this kind of illusion. So the beginning of bhakti is described in chapter 7. And it begins with shraddha. And so generally, shraddha is brought about by hearing. Right? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, parasevanam, etc., etc. So the process of bhakti begins with shravanam. So here in this verse, Krishna said, tat shrinam, just listen, Arjuna. So, just listen. Yes, Krishna, you're my Gurudev. So hearing is the main thing. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. Therefore, Prabhupada describes Shinvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana vridantastam abhadram vidunoti suritsatam. And all of these verses which describe the scientific process of bhakti step by step from anartha of bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, and then nishta, nashta prayasya abhadrasya, nityam bhava seva bhava vidunoti bhakti bhavati naishtiki. Naishtaki means nishtha. So the bhakti becomes nishtha and the person is situated in this mode of goodness. Tadarajastamo bhav kama loba daishtri. He's rising above tamas and rajas. Chetir tunavidam stitam sattve prasidati. He's situated in sattva-guna and so he becomes happy. So by the process of bhakti, as like the process of nishkam karma, one comes to the mode of goodness. Bhakti also brings one to goodness. Evam prasanna manaso, then his mind is happy. Bhagavad bhakti yoga, bhagavat tattva jigyasa. So he understands the science of bhakti tattva, bhagavat tattva vijnana. Mukta sandasi jaya. Then vidyate vidya grantis chidyante sarva samshaya, chidyante chasukarnam drishta eva vinsha. So his, you know, his attachments and his illusions are cut by the process of bhakti. So it begins with Shrinvatam Sakata Krishna, hearing about Krishna. Then Krishna sees, this person likes to hear about me. This person is a serious devotee. Rudyantasta Abhadran Vidunoti. So he cleanses the heart of the devotee. Because Krishna is Suri, he is a friend. So, Prabhupada is discussing this. So, adav shadha tatha sadhu sangata bhajana kriya tato anartya nivrittesa tato nishta ujistata atha saptistato bhava tata prema vyudanjati. So, the first seven stages are called sadhana bhakti, from shraddha to asakti. Right. And then bhava and prema are describing not sadhana bhakti but siddha bhakti or sadhya bhakti, because that is the goal of sadhana, is to get bhava bhakti. So in this verse Krishna mentions the term asakta, mai asakta mana partha. When the mind becomes very much attached. So sakta means attached and asakta means very much attached. So he's referring to the seventh stage of sadhana bhakti called asakti. So how can the mind become like that? Tatshrinu, by hearing about Krishna. Hearing about Krishna. From Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Goswami grants, and the mind becomes very much attached to Krishna. Yoga Yunja, becomes Yoga Yunja, or Yoga Yukta, is connected with the Lord. But here, Mad Ashraya, serving me as a friend, a lover, a parent, and taking shelter of me. Krishna says, Mayi, so that means unto me. Your mind becomes attached to me. There's no other interpretation of this word mayi. It can only mean unto me, Krishna, because he's speaking. So what can be attached to Krishna in a neutral way, or as a servant, or as a friend, as a parent, or a lover? Those are the five direct rasas. And then there's seven indirect rasas, such as hasya, vira, karuna, or compassion, or chivalry, or laughter, or fear, and bhayatsa. All different ones. Bibhatsa. There's horror. And then you see the universal form. So one become attached to Krishna in one of the 12 types of rasas, asatya. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur asks, he says, what types of devotees are eligible to obtain jnana and vijnana of Bhagavan? And he says, this verse answers that question. What kind of devotees are eligible to have jnana and vijnana of Bhagavan, not Paramatma? This verse answers that question. This verse and the next verse. Because in the next verse you say, jnana vijnana saitam. Right? That's why he's using these terms, jnana and vijnana. Jnana to him, so vijnana. He also says, one who eats only one mouthful of food experiences neither satisfaction nor nourishment. You know the famous verse, bhakti paresho namaho virakir na chai shate anyatra chai shatrika ekakalam prapadyamanasya yutashnatushyustushti pushti shudapayo nunhasam. So he quotes this verse. And this verse is saying that just as a person becomes satisfied and nourished by eating food, so similarly, a person who performs bhakti, then he gets devotion, renunciation, and satisfaction, and realization of God. Pareshanubhava. And these happen simultaneously. When one performs bhakti, devotional service, and he gets devotion, realization of the Lord, and some renunciation comes. And a person eats food, he gets tushti, pushti, and shud apayo. That means he gets satisfaction, nourishment, and freedom from hunger. So he quotes this verse and then says that, but one who eats only one mouthful of food, he doesn't get those things. He has to eat a full meal to get that. So in the same way, although one starts to realize me, he doesn't actually, one starts to realize me from the very initial stages of doing devotional practice. But only one who comes to the level of asakti really fully realizes me. Well, he realizes me in truth, let me say. He realizes my sarup as Shamasundar, Kunjabihari. He says that you can know me only in this way. And now the words asangshayam samabrahmam are significant also in this verse. Asangshayam means without a doubt. So it means, it indicates a doubt about attaining nirvishesha brahma. or the impersonal Brahman. In other words, if one performs bhakti, will he go to Brahman? This is the doubt. So the answer is samagramam, that one will attain the full form of Krishna. Actually, the Nirvishesh Brahman is asamagram, incomplete. But Krishna is samagram. He is complete. So you completely understand him. So this word samagram indicates that the realization of that sarup, that Nirvishesh sarup, is incomplete. And this will be stated later on in the 12th chapter. Klesho dikaritaras klesham avyakta sapta chetasam. And samagram means knowing completely. It means as far as possible. Because you cannot really fully understand God completely. And even Lord Brahma admits, Jananta eva janantu name makta name brahma, that he doesn't understand fully Krishna. So even Brahma cannot know the Lord completely. So what to speak of us? So it means, samagra means as far as when we're talking about ourselves, and it means as far as humanly possible. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan says it means knowing his residence, his opulence, and that he's the supreme controller. His residence, his opulences, and that he's the supreme controller. So this verse is describing Ananya Bhakti, Eka Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, Para Bhakti, pure devotional service. Not all the verses in this chapter, or maybe this one verse describes Shuddha Bhakti, as far as I can remember. It's only this one verse. Right? And the mind is attached to Krishna at a sati. Even when the sadhaka is laying down, relaxing, or joking, he always remembers Krishna. The mind automatically springs back to Krishna. That's the essential feature of this devotee at the stage of asakti. Right now, our mind is springing back to Maya automatically. Right? Spontaneously, we're attached to Maya. But at the stage of asakti, then the mind is just always thinking of Krishna. Even if you try to think of Maya, your mind will spring back to Krishna. So that's when the mind is the friend of the devotee. Because even you forget Krishna, the mind will remind you. Right now the mind is pulling us away from Krishna. But later it will actually bring us to Krishna. So Prabhupada in one place mentions that from attachment, then it's all downhill. From the stage of asakti, then it becomes very easy to perform bhakti yoga. It's like riding a bicycle up a hill in the first 3-4 stages. When you get to nishta, it's kind of like an even road, you know, it's flat road, even. And then when you get to Ruchi, there's a slight decline. And the bicycle, you can just kind of, don't have to pedal so hard now. And then the sakti, there's more decline. And you're like rolling fast without pedaling. Pedaling with very little effort. But so for us, it's like just getting to Nishtha, that is the hard work. And that's why you have to be very determined in the beginning. Because there's no love or attachment or attraction to Krishna. So it's just based on our conviction, our knowledge, and we get a little taste. Yeah, there's something there. But not so much. So we're dependent more on our conviction, our realization, our knowledge, our association. You know. Prabhupada comments here. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating itself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. In personal Brahma-jyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma-jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. So the Ishvara, Prakriti, and Jiva, the main three types of sambandha. One should therefore begin yoga practices as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration upon the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and foremost. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, "Touch Shrinu, or hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore, by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education." Prabhupada again ends the commentary in the last sentence, "Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness, one can understand the science of Krishna." So I think you've heard probably a million times how hearing is the most important of all the senses, right? When you're sleeping, it's only the ears which can wake you up. Right? So the hearing is also seeing and understanding. Often we can actually see more with our ears than we can with our eyes. Because the eyes are kind of don't give us as much depth of understanding as we can get from our ears. So to hear is much more important than to try to see something. We have a lot of faith in our eyes, actually, more than our ears. But the eyes are very limited. Because right now you can only see what's in this room. But you can hear birds chirping from outside. You cannot see them. Right? They can actually, the ears are special. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. The whole material creation begins from sound and ether. And people who are blind, that their sense of hearing becomes acute, whereby they can understand many things just from what they hear. Also, we notice that there's two ears and one mouth. So we should use it in that proportion. We usually use the mouth more than we do the ears. We like to talk, but we should listen more than we talk. We know that sound can influence the masses of people if someone is a very good orator, like Adolf Hitler. When he gave lectures, he would stir the masses of German people to the point where they were even performing such atrocities. Or if there's an opera singer, a lady who can sing and hit a very high note, she can crack a glass, a crystal glass. The glass will crack. They can do that with sound. And nowadays, you go to the dentist, and before they had some kind of drill that would clean your teeth. Now they have an electronic sonic, it's kind of an ultrasonic sound. It vibrates at a very high rate, and it cleans the plaque from the teeth with sound, actually. That's what's cleaning, the cleaning agent. So you can see sound is very powerful. When the jets hit the sound barrier, you hear this loud sound in the sky. It feels like it's shaking the whole house. Right? Of course, maybe the planes are, I don't know if they do that anymore, but it used to be that you would hear this very intense rumbling sound in the sky when there was a jet coming over.
Concorde.
Huh? Concorde. Well, like a big jet. Krishna says that the beginning is sound, hearing. And that develops one's faith. Okay, we'll chant the next verse.
Gyanam teham savigyanam idam baksha sheshadah yajyatvani bhuyanyash yatavam avashishyate.
I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Prabhupada writes, complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, of which Krishna will discuss in a few verses, right? The property, the bhinna property, and the spirit behind it, and the source of them both. So the jivas, or the tatastha shakti, and the property, or chit shakti, or achit shakti, or jad shakti. Krishna will describe these things, and if you know them, then there's nothing else to know, because there's the vishesha and visheshanas, and that's all. It's Ishvara, Prakriti, and Jivas. So if you understand them, then you understand everything. There's nothing left other than that. So generally, jnana means knowledge of the body and being different from the soul, or the soul being different from the body. Anyway, the difference between matter and spirit. But here, jnana means Krishna and his energies. Ramanujacharya says the word vijnana refers to knowledge of Krishna's form, his swarup. So you have knowledge of Krishna, his ontology, his prakriti, his shaktis, and vijnana meaning his swarup, his personal features. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur quotes Krishna saying, until one is situated on the platform of asakti, knowledge of me is aishvarya mayi. Knowledge of me is full of opulence. Knowledge of my opulences, and it is called jnana. So before the stage of asakti, this jnana means Aishwarya jnana. And when one comes to asakti, then it means Madhurya jnana. He says later, when one attains asakti, my madhurya is realized through vijnana. Please hear about both of those, after which there will be nothing else to know. So he gives a different explanation of jnana and vijnana. So his term of jnana means before asakti, knowledge of Krishna's opulences, Aishwarya jnana. And after, when one attains asakti, then madhurya is realized through vijnana. So vijnana means madhurya, jnana, knowledge of Krishna's sweetness. So you can see this many, just these two words have many different meanings, right? So Krishna says, idam vakshami asheshatam, that I'm going to tell you everything. Ashesha, without limit. Right? Vakshami, I will tell you. Ham vakshami. So here, this is the first time we've seen any scripture where the person speaking is saying, I'm going to tell you everything completely. Because we look in the Western Malecha Shastras and we see, you know, statements like in Jesus Christ says, I have many things yet to speak, but ye cannot bear to hear them. That means he's holding back some of the knowledge. It's not asheshata, it's sheshata. And I think in the Quran there's some similar statement. But we don't. So here Krishna is saying that I'm going to tell you everything. Means everything's revealed by Krishna to Arjuna, who is his friend, Bhakto Sime Sakha Cheti, and his devotee. So Arjuna, Krishna is like preparing Arjuna's ears for hearing by saying this verse. He's saying, idam vakshami asheshata, vakshami asheshata, I'm going to tell everything. And yajgyatva, having know this, having understood this, neham bhuyon yash gyatavam avashishyate, there will remain nothing left for you to know. So he's glorifying this knowledge that he will speak in a few verses. And he's simultaneously preparing Arjuna to make him more eager to hear it. It's like, you know, putting a little oil in the frying pan. He's cooking Arjuna's ears with some masala, with some mustard oil, ghee. Getting him ready. Okay, next verse. Manusharam sahaseshu kasti yatadi siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kasti mam viti tatvara. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So again, he's kind of getting Arjuna ready. He's telling him how rare this is. Ochin reka, ochin, very rare. Hardly anybody knows this. Even those who are perfected for siddha. So in this chapter, Krishna repeats this same message to Arjuna in verse 19 and verse 26. when he says bhavanam janmanam ante jnanam, that after many, many lifetimes someone may understand me true. And then the 26 Vedaham Samatikani Vartamana Kastana. But I know everything, past, present, and future, but hardly anyone knows me. So it's very, very rare to understand Bhagavan. Prabhupada writes, the first six chapters of the Gita are meant for those who are interested in transcendental knowledge, atma-jnana, in understanding the self, the super-self, and the process of realization by jnana-yoga, dhyana-yoga, and discrimination of the self from matter, sankhya-yoga. However, Krishna can be known only by persons in Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Yoga. So it's clear the first six chapters are good, but they're just the beginning. Now we're getting to, you know, the highest thing here. We're approaching the Mount Everest, the Golden Mountain. So the first six chapters has Atma Tattva, Paramatma, Jnana-yoga, and Sankhya-yoga. And now we're on Bhakti-yoga. So Krishna is now describing the adhikar for one to actually hear this knowledge. And it's a high adhikar. Because as out of thousands of men, only one tries for perfection, and out of such kinds of perfect persons, thousands of perfected beings, only one knows me in Vete Tattva, in truth. Remember, he said before, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Vete Tattva. So that was kind of like a hint or seed of this statement now. This middle six chapters, knowledge of Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments also. He says that even jnanis and yogis who are endowed with symptoms described in the previous six chapters rarely attain knowledge of me completely with vijnana, with realization. Even great rishis and yogis who have the qualities in the previous six mentioned in the previous six chapters, they very rarely get knowledge of me with realization. So what is the conclusion? The bliss of Savishesh Brahman is thousands of times superior to the bliss in Nirvishesh Brahman. Because the jnanis and yogis can attain nirvishesha brahman, or impersonal brahman, sayujya mukti. But savishesha brahman means the brahman with qualities, with special qualities. He can only be achieved by the devotee. So it's much, much higher. Higher adhikar and higher result. Thousands of times greater, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes. Prabhupada writes in this regard, it is not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or the Paramatma realized yogi to understand Krishna as the son of Mother Yashoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Munyanti yat surayaha. Mam tu virana kastana. No one knows me as I am. The Lord says, and if one does know him, then sa mahatma sadhulabha. Such a great soul is very rare. Therefore, unless one practices bhakti yoga to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, tatvata, even though one is a great scholar or philosopher. Only the pure devotees can know something, not everything, of the inconceivable transcendental qualities of Krishna. In the cause of all causes, in His omnipotence and opulence, and in His wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, because Krishna is benevolently inclined to His devotees. He is the last word in Brahman realization, and the devotees alone can realize Him as He is. So, now Krishna has prepared Arjuna's ears with some masala. He's becoming very eager now to hear. Now Krishna is going to begin His description of His opulences. How He's the source of everything.
Bhumirapangalo vayu kammano buddhirevacha ahankara ityamme bhinna prakriti ashtana.
Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together, these eight constitute my separated material energies. So, in relationship to bhakti, the word jnana means Aishvarya jnana of Bhagavan. It does not indicate atma jnana. So now Krishna is describing His Aishvarya again, in this beginning with this verse. So, I mean, the word jnana in the middle six chapters has a different meaning than the word jnana in the first six chapters. Not always, but often. So we have these gross bhinna prakriti and subtle bhinna prakriti. 5 and 3. Which you know very well. So bhinna, right, means separated. So Krishna has empowered prakriti to move separately and independent of His direct control. That's why it's called bhinna prakriti. Krishna has empowered that prakriti, deputized that prakriti. You act separate from me, Maya. And He does with yoga maya also in the spiritual world or in the Prakat Lila in Vrajabhumi. Then yoga maya also covers Krishna and acts independently. But that's for so that Krishna can enjoy His Lila. But in this case, this material maya, the Mahamaya, it is empowered so that Krishna doesn't have to have direct control over everything in the material world. Anyway, He can also enjoy His Leela without having to do so much work directly.
Krishna
is bowing
His Maya to be dependent on
Him. Yeah, that's what Bhinna means. So this knowledge which deals with Krishna's opulences is actually a part of devotion or bhakti. This knowledge about Krishna's opulences is a direct, it's devotion. It's not just knowledge. Because Krishna is saying that these are mine. So we know that, you know, he's describing these eight shaktis, but actually within those eight are another 16. Because you have the Gyanindriya, Karmindriya, that's 10. Then you have the five sense objects, touch, form, taste, like this, right? Sound, form. And then you have Mahatattva. So these are all, these will be described later, chapter 13. So you get 24, the Samkhya Yoga. So when one understands these things in relationship to Krishna, then there's the Anga of Bhakti. But if you're trying to understand them without their connection with Krishna, then it's not bhakti, it's just sankhya. So jnana, it doesn't just mean the difference between matter and spirit, about the body and the soul, but it also means about the opulences of God. And here we see these opulences described. Text 5.
Aparyamitastvanyam prakritim hidi me param jiva bhutam mahabaho yaidam dharyate jagat.
Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. So we have para and apara. So this is the para shakti, or jiva shakti, or tatastha shakti. They are conscious beings, sentient beings, whereas the apara shakti is insentient, inert, unconscious. Why are they called para? Because the living entities are exploiting or enjoying the inferior nature. And thus the inferior nature is called apara, because it's controlled, manipulated by, or exploited by the jivas. Right? Because that material energy is inert, this bahiranga shakti is external, or apara. It's inferior. The living entities are conscious, sentient. The jivas are different and superior to the property because of consciousness. They sustain the universe. Dharyate means actually to sustain, like the word dhar, like dharma, means to hold. Right? So they're actually maintaining or sustaining the universe, and because it means to say that they accept the material world to enjoy it. Prabhupada writes that the living entities who are exploiting these inferior energies for different purposes are the superior energy of the Supreme Lord, and it is due to this energy that the entire material world functions. So therefore it's dharyate, it's sustained. Material energy is being maintained because the living entities want to enjoy it. Therefore, they are sustaining the universe. It's Krishna who directly is sustaining it. But that is the meaning there. Prabhupada writes in the last paragraph, while exploiting the gross and subtle inferior energy, matter, the superior energy, the living entity, forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. So the jivas are absorbed in exploiting and enjoying the material energy, but that is the cause of their forgetting the Lord, because they're absorbed in the inferior thing. Are superior and they're like exploiting, still they get trapped in the property, which will be more clearly explained in the 13th chapter, because they want to enjoy bhunkte te vajan. What is that? Bhunkte purusha prakriti stoi bhunkte prakriti janguna bhunkte prakriti janguna, because Prakriti Jan, that which is born of Prakriti. They want to enjoy it, and then they get trapped by that. Stohi. Prakriti Stohi. They get situated in the Prakriti. Because they're Purushas. They're false Purushas. They want to enjoy. The false ego, under the influence of material illusion, thinks, I am matter, and material acquisitions are mine. His actual position is realized when he is liberated from all material ideas, including the conception of his becoming one in all respects with God. Text 6.
Etanyoninibhutani sarvaniti upadharaya aham krishnasya jagata prabhavayastata.
All created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So, this is now Krishna just saying both of these things, that he is Prabhava Pralayas Tata, the source and the ultimate annihilation. So everything is takes birth from these two different natures. That's his, or his visheshanas, the jivas and the prakriti. So in this world, everything is only combination of these things, one or the other or both. So combination of Krishna's two energies make up everything in the material world. The point is that everything ultimately consists of Krishna because everything is his energy. Krishna says, I control these shaktis. Thus I am the creator of the entire universe. At the time of annihilation, these shaktis rest in me. They are dissolved in me. Thus, I am their only destroyer. I am their only creator and their only destroyer. Prabhupada also writes, everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation, and matter is created by spirit. Now, in text 7, Krishna says that he's also the maintainer. He says he's, in text 6, Prabhava, Prabhayas, Tata, that I am the destruction, or I am the creator and the destroyer, and now he's going to describe how he's the maintainer in the next verse.
Mata parataram nanya kinchit asti dhananjaya mai sarvam idam prottam sutre managarayo.
O conqueror of wealth, dhananjaya, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on thread. And now Krishna also gives a very beautiful analogy to describe this relationship. First he says that nothing is superior to me. Kinchit, nothing. Mata parataram nanya kinchit. Anything else. So sarvam idam. All of this, both the chit and the achit, are none different from me because they're my creation. They're effects of me. They're in me or on me, resting on me. So after explaining that I'm everything, I'm the source of everything, I'm the destroyer of everything, now Krishna's explaining his quality of being all-pervasive by this saying, Mayi. Everything's resting on me. So it means that I'm the maintainer. Because if it's resting on him, it means not only does he create and destroy everything, he also maintains it. Like pearls strung on a thread. And so Krishna says, in this way, I am the cause of everything. Just as cause and effect are none different, so are energy and energetic not also non-different. So Krishna is the cause, the Vishesha, and the property and the living energies of Visheshanas. They're his effect. But as the cause and effect are non-different. So the energy and the energetic are also non-different from one another. They're abheda. How? Well, the energy comes from the energetic. He's the source of the energy. Just like you have energy. You know, you have intelligence, you have other energies. The person is just kind of made up of energies. And that's you. That's how we know you. Even the jiva has energies of consciousness, right? Of light. It is said that the soul is lighter than, brighter than millions of suns. He has consciousness. This is what makes up the essence of something, is its shakti, its energy. There's a cause and effect. The Father is said to be present in the Son, because the Son is born from the Father, from His energy. There's so many, and later this will be discussed further. You could say that Radhanath Swami is present in this temple, right? Because he created the kind of regulations or the matrix or the way that the temple is run in Chaupati, right? And Radhisham was there, so he just instituted all of these similar things in the morning program, that you have a sick room, right? All of these things. There's no other temples, they don't have a sick room. They don't always chant the Shikshashtak in the morning. Or if they do, they certainly don't sing it in the same melody as you. You know what I mean? So Radhanath Swami is present in his, you know, his disciples also. It's his energy. Or later we'll give some other examples, like the director of a drama. He works with the actors for months, training them exactly how to move, how to speak, express themselves with their facial expressions. Right, where to stand on the stage. All of the things are, the director is doing everything. So at the opening night, and the curtains open, the director may be sick, or he may be enjoying, you know, in a bar or something. But his energy, but whether he's physically present or not, his energy is there. It's none different from him. He's the cause, and that's the effect. Or you listen to a tape of Prabhupada, you can like feel that he's there. It's just a recording of his voice. But it's not different from Prabhupada. His books, right? All of these things. So in this way, Krishna is all-pervasive, because everything's resting. Everything coming from him, these visheshanas are his effect. So in this sense, he's spread everywhere throughout the material energy. You can say that he's impersonally spread everywhere. Right? That's why this Prabhupada states later that there's no difference. There's no argument between the impersonalist and the personalist, or the impersonal aspect of God and the personal aspect of God. Just the same. But if you only get up to the level of the impersonal aspect, then it seems to be a big difference, because you're unaware. But once you're aware of Bhagavan, then you can very easily understand that he is personally present. And Prabhupada gave the example of the mother looking at the shoes of the baby. The shoes are not the baby. But when the mother looks at the shoes, she starts to cry. Why is she crying? Because the shoes are connected with the baby and remind her of son. So the devotee sees the material energy connected with God. And he's reminded of the person, of the persons behind everything. Baladeva Dibhushan makes some comments, says that we've heard from the Shrutis the different levels of various gradations of Brahman or consciousness and lokas. There's various gradations. But we've heard that the top of everything is Brahman, that it's formless, that the highest form is, or the highest aspect is Brahman, that it's formless. So Krishna says, no, there's nothing beyond me, Krishna, your friend. Don't think in this way. Prabhupada quotes from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Yasmat param na param asti kinchit. There's no truth superior to the Supreme Person. He is supermost. And we know this other, natat samas chavidikas chadrushyate. It cannot be seen anything equal or superior to that Supreme Person. Natasya karyam karanam chavidyate. Natas samas chavidikas chadrushyate. There's nothing equal to or superior to God, to Bhagavan. So now Krishna has described his opulence, and we're hearing that directly from him. So we can gradually know him in full. We're taking his advice, Tatshanu, we're hearing from him. But now he's going to describe something different, something more. He's going to describe that not only he is the cause of everything, but he's actually entered into all of these elements as their essence. So somewhere I am the cause and somewhere I am the effect. Krishna's acting as the cause, and he's also acting as the effect. He's in the effect, as the essence. Vishwanath Chakravarti says that, as Antaryami, I enter into and exist in this universe which was created by me. Similarly, I alone exist as the essence within all men and all other living beings.
Rasoham apsukunteya prabhasmi shashi surayah pranava sarva vedeshu shambhake purusham nushu.
O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. So he is the taste of water. So Krishna creates he's the creator of the water, the cause of the water, but he's also in the effect as the essence of the water too. And that's what makes water valuable, is the taste, the pure taste. When someone's very thirsty, the only thing which will actually satisfy us is the taste of pure water. Because if you're very thirsty, you know, to drink, you know, like milk or mango shake, you know, amra ras, it's nice, but it doesn't do the job. It doesn't make you quench your thirst. So this rasa in water is actually Krishna's energy. It's his vibhuti. And Krishna's effulgence is also the sun and the moon, the cause of the sun and the moon. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that as Antaryami, I enter into this universe. And I exist in this universe. So this is how Krishna enters into the material elements. We know Andantarasta, Paramami, Chayantarastam. And he activates somehow this material energy. He's the essence of this. Prabhupada writes, no one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and that there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established his sublime doctrine, Achindya Bheda and Abheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. We also know that from Pranava, all the Vedas disseminated. Pranava is the source of all of the Vedas. So in the Vedas, Krishna is that essence of the Vedas, the Om. A means Krishna, U means Radharani, and M means all the Jivas. So Radha and Krishna are in the Vedas as Om. And the essence and the purpose of the ether is to carry sound. So Krishna is Shabdake. He is the sound in ether. There's no purpose of ether without having sound. Otherwise, it has no real use. And Purusham Nirshu, Krishna is the ability in man, which make men great or distinctive amongst each other. Whatever ability we have, it comes from Krishna. So if we're intelligent, or we're good singers, or we're good cooks, or good preachers, or whatever we do which is good, there's no reason to be proud, because it's Krishna. Krishna is giving us this ability. And he can take it away also in a second. So we become proud of our abilities, and Krishna may just take away those things that we're proud of, just to show us that we're not the doers, we're not the enjoyers, we're not the controllers. Next line.
Punya gandha pratibhyam cha tejas chasmi vibhavaso jivanam sarva bhuteshu tapas chasmi tapasvishu.
I am the original fragrance of the earth, and I am the heat in fire. I am the life of all that lives, and I am the penance of all ascetics. So punya, Prabhupada writes, means that which is not decomposed. Punya is original. Because generally we know punya like punya karma or punya loka, or meaning like pious, right? But actually the word punya means auspicious, fair, pleasant, good, proper, pure, holy, and virtuous. It has many different meanings. So, punya gandha, the original, pleasant, proper, and pure, holy fragrance of the earth. That's right, if you punya gandha, it doesn't mean pious smell, but it means pleasant, and beautiful, and original smell of the earth. I mean, Everything is, all of the gandha is in the earth. That is the specific quality of earth. If you take the seed of a rose plant, which has no smell, and you put it in the earth, which has hardly any smell, and then you put water on it and it has no smell. But when the flower comes, there's a beautiful smell. Where does the smell come from? From the earth. It's there in the earth. Tejas has many meanings also. It implies the capacity to cook and digest. It also means to illuminate or protect from cold. So this protecting from cold is the essence of teja. That's why Krishna says that I am this heat and fire. And the tejas of the fire. Also means the light. But here, particularly, means the heat. Because without the heat, you also can't cook or digest anything. Which Prabhupada mentions it. Without fire, we cannot run factories, we cannot cook, etc. And that fire is Krishna. The heat in fire is Krishna. According to Vedic medicine, indigestion is due to low temperature in the belly. So even for digestion, fire is needed. And of course, of all living beings, life is the essential feature. And of the Brahmanas, it is said that the austerities is his life or his wealth. So for ascetics, their life is their tapasya. So the word tapa means to tolerate dualities. So that is the essence of the tapasvis. Text 10. Bhijamam sarva bhutanam vidhi partha sanatanam buddhir buddhimatam asmi tejas tejasvanam aham. O son of Pritha, know that I am the original seed of all existences, the intelligence of the intelligent, and the prowess of all powerful men. Bij means the seed. Krishna is the seed of everything. So the seed of everything in this world is pradhan. So therefore the word bij means pradhan, according to Baladeva Vibhushan. That is the original, subtle, potential conglomerate of the material energy. And here, what we say, buddhimatam asmi, Krishna is the intelligence of the intelligent people. Of course, that is the essence of an intelligent man, his intelligence. And tejas, tejas vinamaham, it's similar to tapas, chasmi, tapasvishu, right? Of those who have power, I am the power. I am the prowess, or the power of powerful men. So, Baladeva Vidyabhushan says that this is, means the power to subdue others by one's presence. The power to subdue others by one's presence. The power to subdue others by one's presence. Influence. To influence others. Text 11.
Balam balavatam chaham kamaraga vivarjitam dharma virudho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshama.
I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles, O Lord of the Bharatas, Arjuna. Purport: the strong man's strength should be applied to protect the weak, not for personal aggression. So that Balam must be Kama Raga Vivarjitam, without lust or attachment. Kama usually means that the hankering or the desire to maintain oneself, but here it doesn't apply to this. Here it means like passion and desire, as Prabhupada is translating. So one shouldn't misuse his strength, but strength is meant for protecting the weak. That is the religious application of balam. And also kama. Krishna is kama, Dev, he's the original Cupid, right? Eternal Cupid. He's Madan Mohan. He's Kamadevaya Vidmehe. We're meditating on the flute of Krishna. And Kamadev means his Leela. So Krishna's Maitam Jamuna is playing flute, and he's calling all the gopis to come and have Rasa Leela. Clean Kamadevaya Vidmehe. We try to understand that Krishna is the original form, Kamarupa or Kamadev. And this is Adirasa. Vishwana Chakravartika Thakur has mentioned that Janmadya Yasya Yataha also. That this Adi, Janmadi, right? Janma Adi Yasya Yataha means Adiras, or the Madhurya Ras, the original form. And from Krishna, everything else comes. That's why we see this kind of Madhurya Ras, or the reflection of it in the material world. Everybody wants to imitate Krishna and have his own set of gopis and dance with them. You know, in the clubs and pubs and discos and so forth. And even Krishna has the moon, which shines on his dance platform, which is filled with jewels, emeralds, sapphires, rubies, and the various colors sparkle as Radha and Krishna, Roy and Kanu, hold hands and like this, and then twirl around in a circle on this beautiful dance platform, and the moon is shining, making these various lights flicker. Yellow, blue, red, gold. And it's kind of like, you know, in the discotheque they have this big crystal ball and they shine different lights on it, and then the lights twirl around like this, and Krishna has the moon, and then all the jewels are on the platform, and this way it illuminates with various colors. Like this. So we're trying to imitate Krishna in this world. He is performing Ariras. So he's Kama. He's actually the original form of desire, Kamadev. But that Kama is without selfishness. It is only for the pleasure of his devotees does he dance, embrace, and kiss the gopis. Not because he's biologically disturbed or agitated. Within Krishna, he's apapa vidham, right? And he's without veins, and he's without. There's no like blood rushing, you know, to excite his genital due to the mode of passion. Krishna's kama in its original pure form, without of all the. How do you say? The negative factors.